Hello, listeners, and welcome to CMI's Peace Talks. I'm your host, Antti Ämmälä, CMI's Communications Manager. In this show, we look at the world through the lenses of peacemaking. We have conversations with both our own and other top experts on what it takes to build lasting peace in this unstable world situation. In the wise words of our founder, Nobel Peace Laureate Martti Ahtisaari, we believe that all conflicts can be resolved. This podcast is about how to do it. Foreign meddling in elections, cyber attacks, and wars fought with proxies on the battlefield. Hybrid influencing has caught the headlines in recent years. Blurring the lines between war and peace and resorting to a variety of actors and methods, hybrid operations make conflicts more complex and unpredictable. Peacemakers are faced with new challenges. What is now needed to prevent tensions from escalating into an open conflict? With whom to engage and how to resolve one? These are some of the key questions we try to answer today. My guests are Dr. Ed Marks and Dr. Mika Kerttunen. Ed works as interim head of CMI's Middle East and North Africa team, and Mika is adjunct professor of military strategy at the Finnish National Defence University. Welcome to both of you. So let's start with definitions. Mika, you have years of experience on studying hybrid influencing and its impact on conflicts. The term hybrid has dominated much of the discussion about modern warfare. What do we mean when we talk about hybrid influencing?
Well, Antti, that's the million-dollar question, and actually I don't like the very term or notion at all, because it can mean everything, and therefore it's quite often very empty. But it has its point. It has put attention to various ways of projecting political power, whether that political power is a state power or some group's political power. And it usually refers to these non-military ways of influencing information, cyber, another password, mainly focusing on computer network operations, electronic interferences, but also this lower than a threshold of armed conflict operations in the gray zone. So all that is cyber. But to be honest, then normal military operations, they should belong to the hybrid under hybrid concept as well. So it is problematic, but it has its some benefits of it.
Mm. So really a variety of means, conventional
exactly.
And unconventional, new and old.
Exactly, and as such, there is nothing new in these very methods that are being used. Their appearances might be new. For example, all this meddling with elections, or alleged meddling with elections, interferences and manipulation of computer and networks and information and communication technologies. As such, that is new. But as a purpose and using variety of methods from propaganda to hard brutal force, it's nothing new as such.
Mm-hmm. But it seems that it has grown in prominence during the recent years. What's the reason behind this?
Well, there are two reasons. Like one is. A very influential article on hybrid conflict and hybrid war, which set the very notion. But on the background of it is some Russian theoretical military theoretical thoughts, and first and foremost 2014 Russian admittedly very successful operations or maneuverings in eastern Ukraine and Crimea.
Mm-hmm. So Ed, what does hybrid influencing look from peacemakers' perspective?
I think the important thing to think about here is that whether or not we want to use the term hybrid or not, and there are many different analysts which have many different interpretations of what it precisely means. Mm. I think the thing that it's pointing to is the fact that the kind of character or the nature of conflicts is changing, and there are different kind of spaces for where that conflict is happening. Certainly, the informational space is become one area that we've seen a lot more conflict influencing happening. This suggestion of conflicts being fought by in the informational space is certainly one that is not new. Even Sun Tzu, when he was writing about war, saw informational wars as something that is highly central to the whole point of war fighting. But these days you have a huge population of mobile phone users, internet users in the world. I think we're at the point where we now have almost 2/3 of the population in the world which have a mobile phone. Mm. Similar amount have access to internet. A third to a half of the world has access to a smartphone. Mm. So the whole space in which one can, at least on the informational side of conflict, can operate is much larger. So the whole set of tools in which conflict actors have to carry out a conflict is much larger. Mm. So this means an increase in the amount of actors involved in any one conflict in any one space, the sort of intermingling of layers of conflict between sort of local, national, regional, international.
Yeah.
So a local conflict can have quickly national, regional, international dimensions. Likewise, and it's something that's always been there, but geopolitical tensions often play out in small places. So I think the amount of the level of complexity, as you put it at the beginning, is something that actors like ourselves need to really react to really understand what's going on, and to ensure that we're supporting peacemaking efforts in the right way.
So is it fair to say that resolving and preventing conflicts have become harder, actually?
Yeah, I think there's, in one sense, so CMI was established as an organization principally to sort of deal with some of these issues, the fact that there were a variety of different conflict actors that were non-state and often listed entities, which needed to be engaged with in the resolution of a conflict, was something that was part and parcel of the reason why CMI was established. But I think that with these technological changes, also the kind of erosion of multilateralism, the increased unpredictability of global affairs, the erosion of certain international norms over the past years, that's something that is making, I think, these sorts of hybrid conflicts much more prevalent, or certainly changing the way that wars have been fought and the ways that conflict resolution has been conducted.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to follow what Ed said. This one one area of problem is this very variety, complexity and unpredictability that we have gone through. Another one is that the international community is not very well tuned to handle conflicts and incidents that occur below any internationally accepted and recognized threshold, of use of force, aggression, armed attack, conventional, old school political influence, where, for example, now preventive diplomacy, mediation, UN Security Council, international organizations, these governmental international organizations are very comfortable to operate. Hybrid particularly refers to those below these recognized thresholds activities, and we are a little bit armless without without these frameworks, legal frameworks, political frameworks. We need to design perhaps something new.
And since we have the a lot of those tools were set up for a different era.
Yeah, exactly.
And the time has changed, and we need to sort of develop new ways to approach those.
Yeah. Ed, your focus is the Middle East and North Africa. Would you highlight any examples of hybrid influencing from that region?
Yeah, I think the across the region, there's been a high degree of instability, particularly since 2011. And I think in each of the conflicts that are there in the Middle East currently, there is a high degree of a kind of new wars. In terms of the sort of phenomena of what's happening, there's a large amount of proxy involvement in different conflicts. There's a huge amount of contestation of sort of narratives and ideas in terms of different groups trying to cultivate what are the truths in a particular conflict. There's also, I think, a large degree of involvement by different proxy actors in terms of purchasing or being involved in a non-military purchasing ports. Purchasing of certain non-military institutions or assets, which has military implications.
Yeah.
So this the kind of things that people talk about when they talk about hybrid conflict are certainly very much present in. Syria, in Yemen, in Libya, among others.
Yeah, you mentioned communications. Is it fair to say that the use of social media is sort of more prevalent in the Middle East and North Africa in terms of how to sort of boost conflicts or create tensions?
Well, I think the primarily the fact of the conflicts happened in the way that they happened in 2011 was to a significant part, if not to a large part, down to social media. The impact of one event in Tunisia had ripple effects in all across the region, and I think those ripple effects in a sort of narrative space haven't really subsided since then. But I think we're in a situation where, like in Libya, in a country where I'm quite familiar, you have a divided media scene, a high degree of unsubstantiated news being peddled day to day. High degree of involvement of you know, different conflict parties in the propagation of that news. But again, I think these are things that have existed, you know, for a long time. But the really the sort of pervasiveness of social media and access to the internet and mobile phones has really allowed this kind of influencing to, you know, permeate within societies and to increase the sort of time in which you know, such an impact would be possible. So in the past, an article, a kind of samizdat, or a kind of an article that's sort of with the point of causing instability might take a long time to create that instability.
Yeah.
Right now, the, you know, the time frame in which a particular fact or non-fact would be able to be seen and reacted to by anyone with access to a mobile phone or the internet is much shorter.
Yeah.
And that I'd like to point out that any of these hybrid operations or activities, they do not take place in vacuum. They are taking place within what researchers call dyadic contestations. They might be they might occur within a society or between states, bilaterally or regionally. So we can witness this variety of these forms of hybrid activities in between India and Pakistan, Armenia, Azerbaijan, North Korea, South Korea, Ukraine, Russia, Georgia, and also in Western Europe. So it's not a in any way isolated fact of life, but it's very anchored to societal and political relations, and often to these antagonist relations, conflictual relations that have existed for years or even for decades.
But is it fair to say that, as we know, fragile states are really prone to conflicts? And as was discussed here with Ed as well, in the Middle East, you have several of these fragile states. Is it fair to say that with hybrid influencing, it's easier to influence and sort of create chaos and tensions in these states?
Well, I would say yes and no. It depends now. You have to be very careful or very skillful to choose your ways of projecting that particular power or inflicting the desired impact within the target group. In many of these so-called developing countries, radio might be the key media there, whereas in Western Europe or North America, it's obviously social media that gets more traction. So it depends. And now this is perhaps the usefulness of the notion of hybrid, that it puts attention that there are not a single silver bullet to cause this harm or influence or project power, but many. So in some cases, in some regions, it is radio, somewhere it's social media. In some circumstances, it is this small green men that do the job.
Yeah. But in any case, somebody that would want to do some harm through hybrid influencing, you would use existing sort of vulnerabilities
and
fragility.
be very, very skillful to analyze those vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
Logically, similar manner as was has been done with military operations. What's the target? What's the objective? Where are the vulnerabilities? Where can I hit? Now, the hitting is not necessarily a bullet, but speech.
Yeah, I think that the other bit to add to that is that, you know, if we've over the last 20 years come through a time where we've seen a, you know, $1 trillion war, which has not achieved really what it was set out to achieve, and in that same time you've seen the kinds of hybrid type conflicts operating with much greater efficiency at a much lower cost.
Yeah.
So the I think we're going to see in the next few years, and we're seeing now a lot more activity by a lot more larger variety and amount of actors in terms of trying to achieve what they want through hybrid type means. So so conducting using their sort of assets that they have in a strategic way to to achieve their ends.
Yeah. So if we move back to the conflict prevention and resolution side, Mika, I think it was really interesting that you mentioned sort of the inability of sort of official organizations to tackle some of these problems or the hybrid influencing in general. Do you have an opinion? Is sort of CMI as an unofficial organization better placed to respond to some of these challenges?
Definitely, with the caveat of to some extent. And my understanding is that the CMI has always been hybrid, but not the use word hybrid, but comprehensive. Not only talking to these great leaders who quite often happen to be older men, civilian and military, religious leaders, tribal leaders, etc., but also being able to pay attention to the society as whole, the needs of women, families, economy, etc. And I think the comprehensiveness of CMI is the key here, and one of the strengths of this organization.
Yeah. How do you see this, Ed?
Yeah, I would second that in the sense also that really the sustainability of peace, particularly in the Middle East, is down to the ability for any conflict resolution actor, any mediation, peace building actor, to involve all of the right stakeholders, all of the necessary parts of societies and in the official, unofficial space that are needed to create a sort of inclusive solution that can stand the test of time.
Mm-hmm. You raised also the problem of who to engage and sort of what are the topics and so on. Is CMI a better place to engage with some actors in conflicts than other organizations can't really do?
Well, certainly there's the a lot of actors, particularly official ones, are limited in terms of who they engage with and how they engage with them. Being a sort of non-official actor, we have a greater degree of flexibility in who we talk to, how we talk to them, and I think also how we are able to sort of utilize that analysis and how we're able to independently analyze in a conflict setting without the agenda of a nation state, without the you know, with a greater set of analytical freedoms than are in many other institutions or at a state level.
Yeah. So let's say in an intrastate conflict, for example, we are better placed to engage with non-armed actors, for example.
Yeah, no, certainly the non-armed actors, and that's an area that I've written about with colleagues quite a lot. Is there, in particular, where I think that's one would say that would be a particular area of importance of actors like CMI, because we sort of fill the gap that exists, in this broader set of tools that are there at the international level.
Yeah.
In some sense, CMI is well equipped to become more hybrid than the hybrid bad guys, but it requires that also the good actors do their homework. What's the objective? Mm. Who are the audiences or areas to engage with, and how? Using, for example, now radio, social media, key leaders, diplomacy, economic incentives to make the difference, i.e. becoming hybrid or remaining to be hybrid, this comprehensive, because as it says, it is about sustainable peace. It's not only about this truce or armistice that the fighting stops. It's a very good thing if physical violence stops, but work doesn't stop there. It is to build or rebuild societies to build conditions for sustainable peace that we are after or should be after.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? Yeah, just go ahead.
I think also you have this a sense that now with the increasing hybridity of conflict, some of the building blocks of stability internationally are being sort of undermined. So there's a kind of destructive power in this hybrid idea. I think the importance for everyone, but CMI and our peers at this stage, I think, is to find kind of constructive responses that are able to understand and to work with and operate within a hybrid environment, but are able to do so in a way that comes out with, again, building blocks that can have sort of constructive, solutions for that can be sustainable at an international level.
Yeah, but if we look at the toolkit and talk about peace mediators, are peace mediators skilled enough to sort of meet these new challenges, talking about hybrid influencing?
I think in some ways we've always been operating in this hybrid environment, so being able to talk to proxies, being able to understand who's who in the zoo, being able to interact in a way where often the boundaries between war and peace are quite unclear. Mm. I think we are not yet at the stage where we fully understand the impact of the sort of changing character of conflicts, particularly in the cyber realm, also in terms of the fact that I think conflicts these days are much less amenable to the old ways of conflict resolution. Just the older tools, the older the legal framework in which conflict resolution happened. So, you know, we have some of the tools, but I think we're still need to learn more.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of training needs to be put in place as well.
Yeah, I think that there are certainly questions that are as yet unanswered by many sides.
Mm-hmm.
One little bit critical notion, yeah. Hopefully constructively critical, and I'm now referring to some other peace brokers and mediators in the world that I have encountered with, is that there is still tendency of being a little bit one-sided. That it's that particular baby, that particular, sorry to say now, silver bullet that solves the issue. Whether whether it's disarmament, it's economy stupid, it's human rights, it's women. And everything, all these aspects are correct. But it is the comprehensiveness, ability to understand not only what you are trained for, but the neighboring area and the area that is neighboring the neighboring area, getting out of your comfort zone and then mastering this complexity, that's the new skill set. Well, I would say that's the old skill set, but in a new environment.
Mm-hmm. How do you respond, Ed?
I think that's the perfect answer in many senses. It's and I think also, you know, at CMI we do have a large variety of expertise in amongst colleagues, large variety of backgrounds, and a large variety in terms of the way that we work. So I think we're well placed at this stage to react to these sorts of changes and the unpredictability, the changeable nature of the way that conflict happens and the way that conflict mitigation and prevention, mediation can happen.
Mm-hmm. Still talking about countering these threats, in some areas where we work as well is about prevention of conflicts and how to prevent conflict from escalating into an open one. And it's about building states and engaging in dialogue to build these states. What's your perspective on this? How could we help building in sort of more solid states, in having in mind also the hybrid sort of side to it? Is there something new we can bring to the table?
I think that's also an area where the sort of state of the art yet has not been defined. So academically, analytically, we know that liberal states are vulnerable to what are seen as sort of hybrid type actions. I think some of those vulnerabilities exist across the board in terms of all states. It's not just a liberal democracy in Western Europe that is vulnerable to another state undermining its social cohesion.
Yeah,
let's say. So, you know, countries like Finland have tended to develop different ways to help their people be a little bit more resilient to the kinds of unclarities that exist in this sort of global atmosphere, particularly in helping the media literacy of people, particularly children. That's one area where Finland has a as a state being sort of put on a pedestal and showcased. But it runs across the board, in terms of the level, the amount of different vulnerabilities that exist and how that we need to be better prepared to react to those.
Yeah. What do you think, Mika, how to address these vulnerabilities, fragility, how to sort of build more stable societies in order to address these hybrid threats?
I'd like to begin with by reminding us all that 101 years ago, Finland was just recovering of a relatively bloody civil war.
Yeah.
And that the state that the Finnish nation state and society is right now, it has been a long journey. I would say there's nothing new in this field either. It's a question of peace, development and justice. Age-old themes in any peace research or mediation, conflict resolution. But perhaps now, returning back to this, our theme of hybrid, we need to put new elements there. Mm. It's not only about the formal peace. It's not only about economy. It's also about education. It's about technology. Using these same technologies that some guys use for bad, let's use them for peace and prosperity. Building these elements and foundations of sustainability, and of course let's say established elements of human rights, and I would say already established perspective on women. They all need to be there. I'd like to repeat myself and say that the mastery is how to master this complex variety so that these perhaps and most likely quite often contradicting objectives, one going figuratively from left to right, the other one right to left, how to build a package that is cohesive and going into one direction, the direction of good.
Mm.
That's the challenge.
Yeah. Can Finland be regarded as some sort of model in this sense?
Well, Finland and in Finland we have expertise on various issues, but I'd like to point out that we cannot, or anyone cannot copy paste anyone's success.
Mm.
We can learn from each other. We may support others, and in case of Finland, I could point out use of ICTs in society in a good manner is one of our strongholds. Education is there. Emphasis on rights of minorities is there. But we also have to remember that we cannot force feed any of these to any society. It won't. It might feel good, but it won't bring anything to the table.
It was interesting that you mentioned technology in sort of to use it for good ends. What do you mean by this? Do you have an example of this sort of technology?
Well, we use it every day, so we don't even notice it.
Yeah.
It's so obvious for us. It is to educate us. It is to entertain us. It is to run our economy. It is to give us free time. We don't have to walk into a bank to run our bank affairs. Some cases we have to, but those are rare occasions. So enabling that to other peoples around the world, that is a possibility. And for example, now in East Africa and also in South Asia, since the mid 1990s, mobile phones have made a big difference. Previously, poorer people couldn't afford a landline telephone with the landline because they didn't necessarily have a home, or that infrastructure was nowhere existing where they lived or where they worked or where they traveled or moved. Mobile phone changed that almost overnight. Now the next step is this smart and interconnected technologies, how they can improve the life of farmers, fishermen, families, and the key thing there is to support development also in this field. And I have one of my babies is this really comprehensive technological Marshall Fund, without any caveats, to put countries up to the speed with the help of Western know-how, Western technology, but in dialogue with those countries, states, and societies, not to force feed anything to anybody.
So technology is one of the keys to building more resilient societies through development?
I sincerely believe so. Yeah. They, of course, come with vulnerabilities and risks, but I would say that the opposite is even riskier, that the people do not have this horizon, this perspective of future. If this perspective is that I don't know if I survive the next year, it's a rather dim way of, unfortunately, and reality for many people. And technology has given us more accurate weather forecast. It can shorten and make lines of supply more effective, which have direct impact on, for example, food production, food distribution, which has direct impact on distribution of economic goods in a society. That doesn't come overnight either.
Ed, do you have something to add in this regard?
Yeah. The technological changes are part and parcel of what has made us really look at this question of hybrid conflict and hybrid influencing, the same kinds of influencing would not be possible or the same level of influencing would not be possible without technological change. So, I think being able to counter this technological change in a positive way is through the sort of better, more constructive use of technologies is essential.
So just to wrap up, question for both of you: is it fair to say that hybrid influencing has essentially changed the nature of conflicts and the way we must deal with these conflicts?
Well, I would say that it has not changed the nature of conflict. Conflict being antagonist, prone to violence, being politically motivated, and being a very uncertain platform of activities. That is still the same. It has changed the appearance and character of this to some extent, and those new characters, new ways of influence, we have to pay attention and, if possible, turn them to our advantage.
Mm-hmm. No, I would agree. In hybrid conflict, hybrid influencing is really a kind of a symptom of the changing character of conflict at large, which also has many other dimensions to it in terms of the new developments in weapons and a variety of other aspects. And I think as yet we're still playing catch up globally in terms of how we can effectively deal with this this changing character, this changing appearance. You know, I don't think the answers yet are satisfactory in terms of how we, you know, we would be able to let's say mediate a cyber conflict or de-escalate a cyber conflict, or let's say you know, mediate a hybrid conflict in a sustainable way. I think these are areas where we still have a lot to learn, and but we're sort of well placed to learn the answers.
Okay, let's see what the future brings. Thanks a lot to both of you.
Yeah, pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to CMI's Peace Talks with Antti Ämmälä. If you like our show, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your friends. You can also send us feedback and propose topics to discuss via social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or by sending email to comms@cmi.fi.